A black hole is a term that my friend John Wheeler invented. And it is about a highly concentrated mass. Mass in the sense of matter which has weight, or potential weight. And this mass is so much reduced in size, so much compressed, that it is below a certain limiting radius, it reaches a certain radius, which depends on the mass. And any mass has a certain Schwarzschild radius. His name was Schwarzschild, and then it is Schwarzes Loch in German. It's by coincidence. And near Tübingen, we have a little village. It's called Schwarzloch, which means black hole, which is 700 years old. Okay. Take the mass of my body and compress it. And if you have compressed it enough so that it is now a little pill of a diameter of maybe, I shouldn't, it's dangerous, a nanometer maybe, I didn't calculate it, then this whole mass of my body would become a black hole, a little one. Because now the attraction of this mass to the light would be so strong that no light could be emitted anymore. And light that would try to escape from the surface of this mass would take an infinite long time to work its way up. And I discovered that this means that the path that the light takes is infinite. Even though it's close here, but even though it's close, in a hidden dimension, it is very far away.
You're saying that something really compressed is infinite.
Anything that is really compressed becomes a black hole.
Okay, a video, can you imagine a compressed video that becomes a black hole? Talking about digital compression.
Yeah, I see. No, information is not matter. And I said everything, but I meant matter. And you found that I was wrong. I should have said everything that is matter and not just information. Yes, so I made a mistake.
Or maybe it could become.
Yeah, no. There are people who think that information and matter is interchangeable. I met one of those people, quite famous, his name dropped from my mind at the moment. But I don't believe it. But it's my fault, but maybe. Also, there are nice theorems about the entropy of a black hole, which has to do with information. And unfortunately, if they are really infinitely far away, as I think, then these theorems are no longer right. So again, I have to apologize to my deeply admired friend he doesn't know yet, Stephen Hawking, at this point. I'm his friend, if I'm attacking him. I'm admiring him deeply. And he also is responsible for a wonderful statement that humankind should use rockets to leave the Earth because the Earth is too dangerous. He said that. So he's really my hero also when I'm seemingly attacking him with one of his theorems. The other theorems are wonderful. And it's friendship. If you have a friend and tell him, look, this thing you do is wrong, then the friend cannot be angry. And I hope he looks at me as a friend.
Is infinite in space or time?
Very good. I say if it is in time as it is also in space, both. Your questions are dangerous. It's wonderful. Yeah.
Do you think through a black hole you can go?
Good question. No.
You can go somewhere?
No. Because it's infinitely far away. Because even light takes an infinite time to reach it. Anything needs an infinite time. It's not true that you can fall into it. And therefore, nothing can ever enter. It's a membrane that is infinitely far away. And just if you would say, it's possible for me to enter something which is infinitely far away, everybody would realize that it doesn't make sense. It's a contradiction in terms. And it's the same here. The interior solution of the Schwarzschild equation, of the Schwarzschild metric, does not exist. So I'm contradicting a well-known theorem here of relativity theory, and people like Landau and Lifshitz if they were still alive, would have great fun talking with me, and I would need people like them to be taken seriously. I do not contradict general relativity, so the equations of Einstein are correct, but their interpretation is false. This I could show. So this size change that I describe, that there is new space being created in the neighborhood of the black hole, so that it's infinitely far away from all sides, even though you can come close, you can circle it quite close. Nonetheless, if you want to reach it, it moves away. It's like in a fairy tale for children. There's a famous children's book author, Michael Ende, in Germany, who wrote famous stories, and he has one figure in one of his stories, which is the seeming giant. And this seeming, you see, the black hole is...
The never-ending story.
Yeah, right, yeah. And this, so the size of people can change when they walk away or so. And this size change of Michael Ende is implicit in general relativity, but people didn't see it before. But it's there. So I'm not an enemy of my good, beloved friend Albert Einstein. But some of his followers might think I'm an enemy of them, which is also not true. I'm just trying to help them understand Einstein.
And is there some other, like, commonly accepted theory that you contradict?
Yeah.
For example?
Thank you. I was hoping that you would ask this question. Somehow I felt you would, maybe, because it was on the tip of my tongue to enter something which would have been an answer to your question, so therefore I hoped for it. You see, I'm an impossible guy. I know science has two principles. One is path-breaking science. You have to find something new, which is a whole new path. This is the ultimate goal to do in science. That's the nicest thing. And if you are still young, meaning less than 60, or even as young as you are, less than 20, then I would suggest you should go this path breaking, finding completely new ways. If you are older, there's another strategy. I call it CBS, consensus busting science. So you look where there is a consensus which is false. That's much easier to find than to find something new, finding errors. And consensus busting science is almost as much fun as path breaking science. And it's much more immediate in its rewards. So it's better for old people. And so I have another consensus which I have busted, killed. And it's benevolent. Killing a false theory is not evil. And it's the Big Bang. The Big Bang doesn't exist. But not many people know, but I have published that. And I can prove it. But no one wants to hear it. But it's very interesting that when you can prove something and the whole world suddenly turns out to be dead silent, you learn something about the world. So it's a very privileged situation to be in. And in that case, it's not dangerous. Young people should know how important they are and how doing what their own nose is telling them is vital. They have the fresh view at everything, mm-hmm. including science. And science is a field where anyone can enter. And only if you find something, it's the only currency. Old people are no longer as strong to really find a new path. Yeah, that's the consensus busting science. That's a simple game for old people. Young people can do it too. But it's almost too cheap to find out where other people have been wrong. So like the Big Bang, you see, everybody believes in it, so it's a wonderful thing to shoot at. So it's fun, not real great progress, just correcting errors. Young people can make real progress, and no one will notice if they do, which is strange. So it takes, after 35 years, you can tell you have a brain equation. But if you have it, you can't tell anyone.
What is the...
Conspiracy of silence.
Conspiracy.
Yeah.
Of silence.
Yeah. If you find something which is new, which contradicts everyone, everyone wants to shoot at you because they try to defend the paradigm, but they can't. That's a quite good feeling. If you realize that that you were so tactless, sorry, tactless in the sense of violating opinions, cherished opinions, but it's not to anger people, it's to find a better truth. But they had already bet their lives on this truth. And so they realized they made a mistake. And that's very hard to accept. And this explains why Copernicus smashed the old system, and Ptolemy was accepted for almost for 1500 years almost, or maybe a little more. And because everybody had checked his results, and they were very good quantitatively, and the new idea of Copernicus was less good quantitatively. So it was really a letdown. Everybody knew this crazy guy. And of course, it was not Copernicus' own idea. It was Aristarchus of Samos. And he quoted him, but he took out his name in the last, in the correction of the proofs. And so it is Aristarchus who really was so strong in his mind. But Aristarchus, it was easy for Aristarchus to be a dissenter, because there were not 1500 years of consensus. But for Copernicus to go back to Aristarchus and take it on his own shoulders, it was virtually an almost impossible feat. So Copernicus is really the big hero that people thought for a while he was. It's a Copernican revolution that he made by allowing people to think again. And Galileo was in his footsteps. And without him, he wouldn't have been able to do it. And of course, there was Bruno in between, and Bruno was the teacher of Galileo. No one says that. They had met, and Galileo, most of the things Galilean relativity is Brunoan relativity, and so on. And I love Bruno. And he was burnt on the stake, and he had something. They put something into his mouth so one wouldn't hear when he was crying from pain. And so cruel. And nevertheless, before that, he said, "The people who burn me have more fear than I." So he was a holy man. And he knew about consciousness. Yeah. Very few people do. There is this religion in Iran, very old. How is it called? Zoroaster. Yeah. And I have a friend from Iran, and he is a specialist in everything. He's a medical doctor, and even older than me, and knows much more. Iraj is his first name, and Rahimi his second name. And he told me that it is the good, to overcome evil. So the good God is stronger than the bad God. And you can help the good better by knowing about the evil side. But the whole religion is not equal in the two. There is one, it is as one desires. But we also briefly talked about cruelty, benevolence and cruelty. And cruelty is benevolence denied. That's the definition. When you need, vitally need benevolence, and you appeal to the understanding of the other side, to the benevolent soul of the other, and he says, no. I am the executioner. My job is to kill you, and I sympathize with you, and I hope you can forgive me. I mean, that's what the nice executioner says. It's not enough. It is still cruel. Because if someone says, please, you have the power to do me a favor, and if you deny it, even though you could, then you do something which could, if it's not important, if it's just having 10 cents or something, it doesn't matter. But if it's a question of life and death, of survival or not, or of mental survival, of survival of hope, of not being, not being crushed in your soul, then this is must not be denied. And it's the only sin I know. So sin exists. And humanity can avoid sin, cruelty. And of course, if someone is given the honor of having to decide between being cruel or not, it's a very rare situation. It occurs about 3 times in life, which is not known. Most people don't know that. They're not aware.
Why 3 times?
It's my experience. Every 20 years or so. It's very rare that you are come into a situation where you are really responsible, where someone depends on you. And it's very easy to overlook it. And if you have overlooked it, I have done it once. Fortunately, the person didn't realize, but I realized. It is the worst feeling you can have in life. It's much worse than anything else.
This might be one of those situations where we can come to something very important.
Yes. No, when I was quite young, 19 years old, I remember I thought about that. Young people sometimes come up with important questions. And I realized, I had a name for that. I coined a term for that. I coined it compatibilization. So if the gains are higher than the losses, then it's okay. And so that's the trick. If you are confronted with very hard, big hardship, then you should let your mind wander whether you find something which includes an even higher gain than you lose at this moment. Mm-hmm. And then you have won. But there are things that cannot be survived. I know. Sometimes fate is cruel. It's not usually it has to do with cruelty of people. But it's not so much the cruelty of the people that you are angry with as the cruelty of fate. So fighting with heaven is to me the most noble activity of man. This was for me a unique experience. Thank you.